My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Growing up in the 50s and 60s, I remember that religious identity was very important to many of my friends and stressed by their parents. One of the blessings of growing up in the religiously diverse neighborhoods of Brooklyn, New York, was joining my friends and their families while celebrating religious festivals and holidays. There was an energy in these gatherings that seemed to transcend the diverse doctrines of the various religions, an energy predicated on the feelings of family, oneness, joy, and love. Today, many are seeking that same energy and often outside of the religions of their birth. According to the Pew Research Center, approximately 37% of Americans identify themselves as spiritual but not religious. This sentiment seems to be prevalent amongst millennials. Is there a way for each of us to pursue this energy of spirit in our daily lives and find meaning and happiness? My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, D. Patrick Miller, has developed a concise approach based on what he calls the spirituality of ordinary life. D. Patrick Miller is the author of dozens of books, two published by Penguin Random House, two by Hampton Roads Publishing, and the rest under the Fearless Books imprint. First trained as an investigative journalist, he began writing about spirituality, human potential, and creativity after a seven-year illness initiated his spiritual path. Since that time, he's intensely studied A Course in Miracles, the Enneagram System of Personality, Jungian Depth Psychology, Shamanism, and related fields of contemporary spirituality. As a magazine and online journalist, Patrick has written more than 100 articles for Yoga Journal, The Sun, The Elephant Journal Online, and many other media. He is also the founder of Fearless Books and Literary Services and has helped other authors prepare manuscripts for such major publications as Viking, Doubleday, Crown, Simon & Schuster, Tarcher Peregrine, Hay House, Hampton Roads, and New World Library. He provides manuscript consultations, editing, assisted publishing, and professional representation to published and unpublished authors working in fiction and nonfiction. He's also a semi-professional photographer whose work can be viewed and purchased in multiple media at Fine Art America. His websites include dpatrickmiller.com and fearlessbooks.com, and he joins me this week to discuss his seminal work, How to Be Spiritual Without Being Religious. Please join me in welcoming to Destination Unlimited, D. Patrick Miller. Good evening, Patrick.
Good evening. Glad to be here.
And thank you so much for joining us, because I believe what you're sharing and what you're talking about in your book is so important today. Please share with our listeners about your early path and your faith background.
Well, I grew up in North Carolina around evangelical Christianity, notably Jim and Tammy Baker's Praise the Lord Club and all that kind of stuff, with the result that I became very anti-religious by high school and considered myself an atheist until my early 30s, when I became quite ill with overnight with something that I couldn't even get diagnosed for a couple months, because at the time it was fairly new. It eventually was diagnosed as chronic fatigue syndrome, about which very little was known then and not much more is known now. And after I exhausted the medical and psychological routes to trying to make my way through that suffering, is when I came upon, you know, what I call my spiritual awakening, which was not fun. And it led me to begin studying some of the paths you mentioned, particularly A Course in Miracles, the Enneagram System of Personality, and Jungian psychology. I would say I went intensely into those three fields simultaneously. A lot of my books have been inspired or about A Course in Miracles, and I also, as an agent and editor, I help a number of other writers in that field. And I would call the course almost the leading manual of how to be spiritual but not religious. And it's confusing for people because the course looks religious and it sounds religious, but it's not really meant to be a religion. It calls itself a course or a curriculum. A curriculum of mind training.
And now let's go back for a second. You described your experience as not fun. Elaborate on that, please.
You mean the spiritual awakening?
Yes.
Yes. Well, it was, I was terribly ill. I couldn't function. I, was going through, a whole panoply of symptoms. Back then, they identified chronic fatigue syndrome by 16 symptoms, and I had 13 of them when I was diagnosed. So it was pretty clear, and they were pretty awful symptoms. It was included non-refreshing sleep. It's where you sleep 14, 16 hours a day and wake up exhausted. Traveling muscle pains, which nowadays is more frequently called fibromyalgia, mental fogginess, eczema, I mean, everything under the sun. And for a long time, I was just utterly mystified as to how all this could have happened. It literally started overnight. I woke up one morning and felt like I had the flu, and it didn't go away for 7 years. And gradually, piece by piece, especially after I encountered the course, I began to understand that if the syndrome was not caused by a deep chronic anger, the only way out was facing my deep chronic anger. And the central ethos of the course, as all its students know, is forgiveness. So that was a huge discipline for me. First of all, facing how angry I was because I didn't want to see it, and then learning what to do about it. And fortunately, the course is gives a pretty thorough step-by-repeated-step training in forgiveness.
So in essence, that 7-year period, your initiation was really a baptism by fire.
Oh yeah. I'm often tempted to say, well, thank God I went through that. But, you know, I certainly wouldn't want to revisit it, and I wouldn't want to visit it upon anyone, you know. It had to happen, and it was going to happen.
Now, you had a background, a career in journalism, and investigative journalism. Did you apply those skills on your path?
In a sense, the when I was in my 20s and working as an investigative journalist, I had a kind of missionary zeal. I was pretty sure there was something wrong with the world, and it was somebody's fault, and I was going to find out who that was and pin it on them. And as a college journalist, I happened to actually be able to witness some of the Watergate hearings in Washington. And so Woodward and Bernstein were like my role models. And I wasn't bad. I was pretty good, except that investigative journalism made me ill, because it was all about anger, and you tended to make more enemies than allies and so forth. So I dropped out of that well before I became ill. It's interesting to think whether those habits helped me through the actual work of spiritual crisis. I would say it did help me think rationally and clearly about what was going on, or as rationally as I could.
Well, the concept of investigation, I think that often when we're launched on a spiritual path, we use those quests, the investigative quests, to seek out the teachers, the books, others of like mind to learn and grow with. In your case, you found A Course in Miracles. What else did you find on your path?
Well, at the same time, or very soon after I started the course, I got initiated to the Enneagram System of Personality. I happened to live in the same town as Helen Palmer, one of the chief teachers. And so I got a real intense introduction to that. And I was also very interested in Jungian depth psychology at the same time. I did some shamanic work, sort of whatever crossed my path. I was so desperate to find a way out that I would try anything.
We're gonna pick up on that point after the break. My guest this week on Destination Unlimited is D. Patrick Miller. He's the author of How to Be Spiritual Without Being Religious. And we'll be back with more Patrick and How to Be Spiritual Without Being Religious after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Welcome back to The Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, and, of course, companionship. Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive, and now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance will come in with this group.
But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Teens in foster care will love you, even if you don't know the lingo.
Dad bod, noun, the result of the occasional donut always washed down with confidence.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council. Visit adoptuskids.org.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is D. Patrick Miller. He's the author of How to Be Spiritual Without Being Religious. Patrick, before the break, we were talking about your initiation after 7 years of illness, going on the path, and at times actually being desperate and pursuing answers. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I mean, it all started, I didn't want to face the fact that there could be more going on with my illness than just a physical illness. I spent a couple months, you know, trying to track down doctors and find the magic cure. All the time I just got sicker and sicker. I finally began to feel like I was so stressed out that, you know, I should go into therapy. So I went into therapy, and not much happened, except I had a very nice, quiet, kind guy who just mostly listened, sort of a non-interventionist therapist. And after a while, I felt like I was just, you know, venting about all my suffering and unhappiness, and I didn't see where anything was going. But during the time of the therapy, I had actually started studying A Course in Miracles in secret. I hardly told anyone about it. I was sort of scared to death of it. It had this kind of magnetic attraction, but it also made no sense and sounded religious, which made me very uneasy. And so at one point, I said to the therapist, you know, I'm not sure where we're going with this, and I'm wondering if there's a different direction we could take. And in classic therapist style, he said, well, what direction do you think we could take? And I said, well, I'm not sure, but I will make a little confession that I've started this strange esoteric teaching called A Course in Miracles, and I'm a little doubtful about it. You're one of the first people I've told that I'm doing it. And, you know, if you happen to know anything about it or want to warn me away from it, that would be helpful. And he smiled and said, well, if you can handle the course, you don't need me. And in fact, that was my last session with him.
Wonderful. And for our listeners, I'm sorry, go ahead, I'm sorry.
It was a big affirmation that indeed, even with all the doubt and uneasiness I had, that I had found the core of my path. I think of my path as having several elements to it, but the course is at the center of it.
Now, most of our listeners, I'm sure, have heard of A Course in Miracles, but for those who are not familiar with it, very briefly, please describe what it's about.
Course in Miracles is a modern spiritual teaching. It only came into being during the 60s and was only published in 1975. It's sometimes called a channeled work. That's not exactly correct. The woman who wrote it down, Helen Schuckman, was a psychologist at Columbia University who heard what she called an inner voice giving her dictation, and she wrote it down in shorthand, over 7 years with the assistance of her boss, Bill Thetford. They were both at Columbia University in the psychology department, so they kept this secret. Had it been known what they were doing, they probably not only would have been fired, they would have been institutionalized. The teaching itself is very strange and upsetting to some people because it uses the first person voice of Jesus Christ to essentially deliver a complete revision of what we think of as Christianity. For instance, it says there is no sin, only error. It completely redefines the meaning of the crucifixion. It's like Christianity, it teaches forgiveness, but it goes far beyond what Christianity calls forgiveness. It's sometimes been called the Christian Vedanta. It's essentially Eastern metaphysics expressed in a language that mixes Christianity and modern psychology. And I say, it's the expression of spirituality without religion. It is the leading modern expression of it. In that, you know, it looks and sounds religious, but it's by no means religion in the usual sense. Now, this is where my investigative skills did come in, because when I was soon after I became a student, I found that there was very little published material about the course. There had been one very harsh criticism published by Psychology Today, a lot of much friendlier stuff, and then there was promotional material put out by the foundation that published it. But no journalist had actually taken on the story. And I did that. I wrote a series of magazine articles, which led to a book called The Complete Story of the Course, that was later revised as Understanding a Course in Miracles. And that was a book in which I not only reviewed the history and interviewed some of the main teachers of the time, but I also surveyed the criticism of it, both from Christian and secular sources. So that was an instance in which I applied what I had learned as an investigative reporter to my own path, in order to, you know, give people good information about what the course is.
What's fascinating is when you say that, it says that the word sin is misinterpreted, it means error. The word sin in Hebrew is chet, which means when an archer misses the mark or misses the target, which is a very human thing to do. It's a missed target. It's an error. It's not something that's horrible or punishable or damnable, but it's a mistake. We're human. We make mistakes.
Right. And the course acknowledges that we can make some very serious mistakes. that you know, the world is never going to be reconciled to or forgive. But it defines forgiveness as, you know, not as making excuses for people or letting anyone off the hook for sins or crimes, but as shifting our own perception. In fact, it calls a miracle a shift in perception, or a way of looking at things differently, or in other words, changing your mind. It basically says changing your mind is a miracle.
And a shift in perception. A shift in perception today would be a major miracle. Now, you shared your story in your memoir, Mostly a Mystic, Reflections on Spiritual but Not Religious Life. Why did you write that book? Did you do it for yourself, for others, or a combination of the two?
I had reached a point, for years I've worked for other authors, mostly as an editor, and I'm now a literary agent, so I actually help people get published. And at the time, I was doing a lot of memoirs. I was helping people a lot with memoirs, and I didn't have one. And I decided, well, it's about time to put this together. And it's not a classic memoir in the sense that I sat down and wrote the story of my life from beginning to end. It's actually a collection of published magazine pieces with a couple new essays that roughly follow the track of my life. And it's funny how it came about. I've been kicking around the idea of doing it for several years, and I just thought, well, there'll always be time to do that. And then a massive earthquake hit Napa, California, where I live. It was 2 years, 3 years ago? When was that? I'm losing track now. But anyway, the day after we had a 6.9 quake, I decided, well, maybe I don't have all the time in the world. And I put that memoir together in record time after that. I had it out. I had it in print 3 months after that.
illness and earthquakes doesn't take much to get you motivated, does it? That's funny. Now, please tell us about your 2017 book, The Forgiveness Book, Healing the Hurts We Don't Deserve.
The Forgiveness Book was actually published long ago in 1994. Mm. As a little book of forgiveness. Mm. And some people still remember it. And it was literally the sort of my graduation speech from chronic fatigue syndrome. Mm. I wrote it pretty much in the seventh year of that illness. And it was a short book of inspirational aphorisms, basically. And it's just sort of happened all at once. And while it took off, it was initially successful. My publisher in New York did some very strange things with it, which led to it disappearing from bookshelves. And so I had to republish it myself, and I republished it faithfully every 5 years under that name, The Little Book of Forgiveness. I changed the title once and called it The Way of Forgiveness. And finally, just a few years ago, I decided, okay, I've kept that book alive forever. It's done. I'm going to let it go. And a publisher, Hampton Roads, happened to see it. My editor, Greg Brandenburg, happened to see it when we met to talk about something else. And he said, I want that.
There you go.
So it's a lesson. It didn't have another life until I gave up on it.
Yes, that's it. And forgiveness, so important and perennial. Forgiveness is something that could be every day of our lives for the rest of our lives and into the future forever. So my guest this week on Destination Unlimited, D. Patrick Miller. He's the author of How to Be Spiritual Without Being Religious. Patrick, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your work.
My two current books from Hampton Roads, The Forgiveness Book and How to Be Spiritual Without Being Religious, should be in most bookstores or can be ordered through any bookstore. A more complete selection of all my books, including the ones that I've published, are at www.dpatrickmiller.com.
And we'll be back with more of Patrick Miller and How to Be Spiritual Without Being Religious after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living. You don't know
my... Knowing your breasts can save your life. Go to knowyourgirls.org for the facts you need on breast health. Brought to you by Susan G. Komen and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening is D. Patrick Miller. He's the author of How to Be Spiritual Without Being Religious. So, Patrick, How to Be Spiritual Without Being Religious is about to be released. I think that the publication date was supposed to be November. What was the genesis, pardon the biblical reference, of this work?
Well, again, this is a revived book. It was originally published in 1995. As by Henry Holt, as the Book of Practical Faith. And And the new edition is completely unchanged in text. It just has a new title, and it has a new foreword by Ianla Van Zandt, who was always a big fan of the book. So this was a book. Back then, the term spiritual but not religious was just beginning to be used. So I wouldn't have titled it that then. But it is about the sort of the inner core of the spiritual experience, rather than any particular beliefs. And in the book, I described four steps to a practical faith.
And we're actually going to touch upon those steps a little bit later.
Okay.
But getting back to the concept, what does it mean to be spiritual but not religious?
Well, wow, have we got all day?
Yes, please. Go ahead, please.
I've actually written essays on this. There are a number of things that characterize it. I would say one of the biggest shifts is moving God from out there to within. Instead of conventional religion's idea of a God out there somewhere who's both loving and judgmental, God is seen as an intelligence or force or potential within us. And it's sort of like, or what you might call our higher self or highest self. And that essentially is, you know, what has characterized a lot of what's called New Age spirituality, is that move from out there to within.
Now, you call your approach the spirituality of ordinary life. Please explain.
By that I mean, you know, whatever gets you through. that, you know, everything that I learned on my spiritual paths was not about trying to be a good religious person or trying to meet any commandments or satisfy any, demands of a spiritual leader, but just getting through life. And finding out, you know, what would work better than the chronic anger that I grew up with and that made me so ill. And so I made a big shift from being a person who was chronically angry and didn't quite know it to being one who at least tries to live with a forgiving attitude. I don't mean to make that sound easy or simplistic, and it certainly doesn't mean that I never get angry, but it means that I view it differently, and I question what it's about, and I'm aware, more aware of what I'm doing, thinking, and feeling when I'm angry than I used to be.
Did you get in touch with that initial anger?
Well, that's an interesting question. There were two kinds of initial anger to get in touch with. One was just anger about my family of origin and what went on there. And the other was the deeper anger, which A Course in Miracles talks about, which is our very deep anger at sort of a chronic misidentification of ourselves as bodies and egos rather than spirit. That's a more complex and sophisticated kind of anger, and it can take a while to, you know, understand what that even means. But yeah, I would say I got, you know, introduced to to many levels of anger. I used to do some speaking to chronic fatigue support groups. And I would sometimes get some flack from people when I would say, you know, I learned that if my syndrome had not been caused by anger, that certainly learning to forgive my anger was the way out. And chronic fatigue is a very politicized illness because doctors don't understand it. They often dismiss it as not real. And people often thought, they would say, well, you're just saying what the doctors tell us, that it's all in our minds. And what I would say to that is, yes, it's all in your minds and it's all in your bodies and it's all in your spirit. It's all over you. And it's all about changing.
Now, we talked about the four steps. You started alluding to the four steps in your book to achieving non-religious spirituality. The first is releasing guilt. Isn't that a challenge for most of us?
Yes, and it's the first. It's like moving God from out there to within. It's a huge step away from conventional religions, almost all of which use guilt to some extent to keep people in line, you know. I met somebody recently who said she had a one Jewish parent, one Catholic parent. I said, "Well, you really got a double dose of the guilt in different styles."
I come from a similar background, so I know that very well.
Completely different styles of guilt, but so yeah, it's a very common thing. I would think that I know in my own psychology. It took a while to identify all the guilt and release it, and you know, I still deal with that sometimes. There's a lot of our ego identity that's actually rooted to guilt and doesn't want to let go of it. So yeah, that's the first big step. First big step, I would say, that's going away from conventional religion and into a more personal spirituality.
And how much does forgiveness play a part in that?
Well, it's the central discipline, you know. And although it often begins with forgiving someone else for what they seemed to do, eventually it all gets back to forgiving ourselves for the way we have seen everything. The Course has this very annoying suggestion when it says that we can see everything that another person does as one of two things, that they're either expressing love or asking for love. And then it asks the student, in either case, what's your response? I call that annoying because it doesn't allow any room for shame or guilt or blame. You know, if someone else is either showing love or asking for it, you have no other response but love. Now, in the cases where someone's asking for love in a very violent or negative way, it's a huge challenge to know how to respond in a loving way. But forgiveness of self as an ongoing discipline is key to knowing how to do that.
Now, your second step is gathering trust. Does this include trust in self as well as in others?
Of course, and again, it's pretty much like forgiveness. If you don't trust yourself, it's very difficult to trust others. And I also talk about there's a difference between trust and expectation. you can expect. You can expect people not to often do the best. It's a different issue from how much you trust them to do, how much you trust yourself to do. But it is, and you know, it's again, it's an inner discipline that is not talked much about in conventional religion.
Does that include trusting the inner voice, the intuitive self?
Yes, and to do that, you first got to recognize it. And forgiveness plays a role in that, because unless you can forgive shame and blame and chronic anger, you can't even hear an inner voice. All that stuff's got to be out of the way before you can hear, you know, what's often called the still small voice.
You've got to clear the interference. You've got to clear that shouting ego-based voice in order to hear the true inner voice and the intuition. My guest is D. Patrick Miller. He's the author of How to Be Spiritual Without Being Religious, and we'll be back with more of Patrick after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Have you bought into the idea that you have to work hard for your money, that business is hard? I will share some dynamic access consciousness tools to get you out of your own way so you can create a business that actually succeeds. Join me, Simone Millicers, on The Joy of Business at 4 p.m. Mondays Eastern.
In the wake of a disaster, what one thing can you send that will help people the most? A blanket, a tent, a sandbag, a doctor. Actually, if you send a monetary donation, you send all these things. Even a small donation can make a big impact and can quickly become exactly what people affected by disaster need most.
In the wake of a hurricane, your monetary donation can make a huge difference to those in need. To donate, visit supporthurricanerelief.org. That's supporthurricanerelief.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Have you wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Why should you volunteer with Meals on Wheels?
I'll come to the door with one meal and I'll walk away with a full heart.
Drop off a warm meal and get more than you expect. Volunteer at AmericaLet'sDoLunch.org. Brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening, D. Patrick Miller. He's the author of How to Be Spiritual Without Being Religious. So we're talking about the four steps that you've described to achieving non-religious spirituality. The third step you suggest for achieving this is practicing patience. What are a few ways that we can develop a practice of patience in a very impatient world?
Well, of course, there are disciplines. you know, like meditation, that, you know, that help you deal with time differently. It's also just a matter of not expecting things to happen too fast. There's a section in the book that I call Waiting on Nothing, which had to do with the depths of my illness when I basically had no prospects. I was pretty sure I was not going to die, but I just as soon would have because I couldn't function. Nothing was going on. There was no hope for improvement, and I was encountering, you know, the classic dark night of the soul, where there simply is no hope. And looking back on that, I realized that was a discipline of waiting on nothing. In New Age circles, there's often a kind of frenzy or impatience, you know, to get enlightened, to get blissful, to achieve perfect health, you know, to get it, to get something out of a discipline. And one of my favorite teachings, I think it's from Ikkyu, if I'm remembering this correctly, a Zen teacher, when he said, we would really love to help you, but in Zen, there is nothing.
Wonderful.
It's something in Zen, we have nothing to help you with. And that is, that's the key to what I call practicing patience, of just waiting on nothing instead of timing your expectations of when you're going to get enlightened, when you're going to get better, when you're going to find the perfect relationship, you know, because making those things happen is not the essence of the spiritual discipline. Waiting is really the essence of it.
Yeah. Your final step is learning transcendence. How do you define transcendence, and how may we learn transcendence?
The Latin root of transcendence means literally to climb over. I've always liked that connection because it implies that there's work involved in the process of transcendence. You don't just float above. You just don't float above your sordid reality and enter bliss. You climb over. And now there are certain, you know, experiences that can take you there faster. I've never done psychoactive drugs or anything, but there are certainly, you know, many stories of that path, whether it's through the classic hallucinogenics like LSD or the what's more popular now, ayahuasca and so forth. But a genuine spiritual discipline is so difficult and such a long-term proposition that if you don't occasionally have some glimpses of the infinite, you know, it's hard to be inspired. It's hard to keep going. And so, you know, occasional transcendent experiences can help remind you that you're on the path. And that can be as simple as it doesn't necessarily have to be a mind-bending altered state. It can be as something as, you know, peculiar as a just a synchronicity that amuses you, or a dream with a big message. Anything that sort of tells you, yes, you know, this is the way you're going. When I was very, very ill, and I had just started A Course in Miracles and had tremendous doubt about whether it was the right thing to be doing, I was so mentally foggy, I thought I might be losing my mind. I had a dream, and in my dreams at that time, I often dreamed that I was driving a a beat up, a barely functioning car. And I could understand that the car represented my physical state, my body. So in this dream, I was driving an old beat up truck that my father had owned. And it was raining hard. I couldn't see where I was going. I was afraid I was going to wreck. And then all of a sudden, I realized that in the passenger seat was President Jimmy Carter.
Mm.
He was not president at the time, but had been recently. He was always a personal hero of mine. I regard him as a figure of real integrity. Still do. And so all of a sudden, I was hugely embarrassed. And I turned to President Carter and said, "Mr. President, I am so embarrassed, you know, to have you here. I don't know where I'm going. This truck is going to break down. You know, I'm just so sorry." And he smiled and he said, "It's okay. I have a map." He reached into the glove compartment and pulled out a copy of A Course in Miracles. And then I woke up. And it was one of those big moments, just like I'd had with a therapist, of like a reminder coming from the unconscious of, yes, this is your path. Stop worrying about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Patrick, there are those who need the comfort and structure of familiar ritual and doctrine in their lives. May people like that find this in non-religious spirituality?
Well, they can certainly find it. They can devise it on their own in terms of rituals. They can find it in less formal, groups. The course is characterized, you know, by thousands of study groups around the world. And, of course, there are some churches that still offer, you know, a strong sense of community and common purpose and but are not so identified with the heavier tenets of conventional religion. And I'm thinking mainly of Unitarian Universalist and Unity churches. So both Unity and Unitarian, I think, are fairly friendly homes for the spiritual but not religious.
And there are many interfaith congregations around the country and around the world now.
Yes, yes. It's certainly not impossible to be following a personal spiritual path within a church environment. And I'm not interested in getting anybody out of church. But as you noted from the Pew Research statistics, you would hardly know from what you hear in the press that it is the spiritual but not religious population that's growing in this country. Evangelical and conventional Christianity is shrinking. They get the lion's share of attention in the news, but that's not the growing demographic. It is, in fact, the people who feel more comfortable calling themselves spiritual but not religious. That's actually what's growing in this country.
Does this path require a belief in God or divinity of some form?
Well, it depends on how you define God. I would say in conventional terms, I would still call myself an atheist in the sense that I don't believe that there's a big daddy out there somewhere who's either loving me or judging me or condemning me. I think of God as the highest human potential within myself and within people as a collective. The Course has a repeating theme that says, God is but love, and therefore so am I. So it all depends on, how you define it.
What would you like readers to take away from How to Be Spiritual Without Being Religious?
Um, well, a sense of how to define if they find themselves in doubt about following an individual spiritual path. You know, maybe they burned out a religion or turned away from it. You know, I'd like them to have an increased sense of what the inner nature of the experience is really like, apart from what they believe or don't believe. Because I think whereas conventional religion does tend to be about the identification with the beliefs, the personal spiritual path is about the experience, and largely the experience of feelings. The next book I'm working on is called Where the Soul Wants to Go, Following Our Feelings into Wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's it's a key issue, is that religion is something we believe or don't believe. Our spirituality is largely what we feel.
Mm, absolutely. My guest is D. Patrick Miller. He's the author of How to Be Spiritual Without Being Religious. Patrick, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your work.
My personal author website is dpatrickmiller.com. I also have the books that I publish or represent for other authors can be seen at fearlessbooks.com.
Patrick, thank you so much for joining us, and when your new book is ready, please come back.
I certainly will.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Berman. Have a wonderful week.